I'm just thinking of this one song for this musical I'm gonna audition for.
Wait, who's putting on Hamilton?
No, not Hamilton.
Oh.
No, a different musical.
I was about to
but
say.
But there's a line in it where she's like, "And I know he'll appear, but I seem a bit bipolar."
From the
literally
from Shrek.
Yeah.
Wait, you're auditioning for Shrek.
Yeah, I want to be the dragon.
Oh,
make a donkey
such a good
pot pie.
Make donkey pop that donkey pussy.
No.
That dusty.
Oh my gosh, my parents are upstairs.
I'm sorry.
Well, hi. Welcome to As Long As It's Spooky. That was an intro, man. We got an intro there.
We sure did.
So, we're actually recording this in advance because, Alex, why don't you tell them where you're going to be?
From the 12th to the 15th, I will be in Massachusetts. I'll be staying near the Boston area. I'm not going to exactly say where because it's not my address, and I'm pretty sure Parker wouldn't appreciate me putting him on blast like that.
Sorry.
But I'm going to be in Massachusetts, so I don't know if we'll have time to record an episode, especially because that week is going to be a shorter week for school, so we're probably going to both be busy with schoolwork and making sure that like we have everything because we're both in AP classes.
Yep.
Oh, so senior year is killing us. The FAFSA website keeps crashing on me every time I try to...
FAFSA?
I always say FAFA.
FAFA.
But it keeps crashing on me, and it's like, please, I already got accepted into my dream college, and I just want money because I'm poor, I'm brown, I'm trans, I'm gay, give me scholarships.
You can get so many scholarships.
I can.
So can I.
Hell yeah! Yay for being minorities!
Guess who got her grant? I got my grant.
Oh, which one?
The $10,000 one.
Aww. Fuck yeah, the singing one?
Yeah!
Nice! I'm so proud of you! Hell yeah! That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, anyway. So this week's episode.
Enough joy and revelation, this is.
Let's get back into the depressing spooky. Well, this week's theme is.
Black widows.
Not the spiders.
Oh, well, my mom did see a black widow once.
No, we're not going to talk about that.
We're living in North Carolina.
I have arachnophobia. We're not going to talk about
she
that.
She was at the top of the basement.
No, stop. I sleep in my rooms in the basement.
You don't live in North Carolina, and it's not a house you just moved into.
I know, but there's a lot of spiders.
Well, that's...
There was a spider in my hair.
Plant or something that wore them all.
I woke up with a spider in my hair one day. I don't think you realize how terrified I am.
There are always spiders in my house. Do we have a spider problem?
Did you wake up with one in your hair?
No,
my
there's
sir?
Been several.
Yes. No, you said no.
There's been several occasions where I went into the bathtub and one has appeared when I'm fully butt-ass naked.
Anyway,
and
we're going to talk about black widows.
I don't want to bust my skull open because of the goddamn spider.
I had a friend who actually lit a spider on fire, and it didn't die for, like, a good minute.
When I was camping once, sorry, I'm texting myself. I went camping once when I lived in New York City. I was summer camping. Are you okay? Are you sleeping?
Yeah.
Bless you. I didn't notice. But a spider crawled into the fire, and she was pregnant, and our camp counselor tried to save it, but she couldn't. So let's move on to black widows.
So, black widow is a term for a woman who kills her husband.
Or her spouse.
Her spouse. Yeah, don't judge here. We're a very open community.
We do judge if you murder someone.
Yeah, that's not cool.
It's just not, it's not good, my dude. It's not a good look, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really think these women have been... girls off balance, and they need to get some healing stones, and they need to go out in the mountains, sit down with kombucha, do some yoga, and just put it all in.
Not all women live in Boulder. Anyway, I'm going to be talking about Catherine Knight.
Alliteration.
Okay, literally, this article I'm going to read about her was published in 2018. It's not a very long story, which is what scares me the most.
I mean, when you think about it, a lot of the murder, like, serial killers that are especially famous aren't really old stories either, like...
No, but I mean, I think she's still alive and good.
Golden State Killer was just caught, and he's still alive and good. I've been reading I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara, and I have a lot of feelings about it, and I love it.
She's not dead.
Oh.
She's still alive.
It's unsurprising since they got rid of death row. Well, not death row, but they got rid of, like, death penalty in the States.
So, we're going to talk about a Catherine Knight who has a history of violence. But when she met John Price, her violence level escalated to a level no one saw coming.
Oh.
Yep. And that's her. She looks crazy.
She looks like the type of woman who'll come up to you when you're working, like, a late night shift, and she'll be like, can I speak to your manager? And you'll be like, what can I help you with, ma'am? Is this the solution that I can solve? And she'll be like, all the tomatoes in your produce section are rotten. And you'll be like, we just got new tomatoes yesterday. They're rotten. To your manager?
Not based off of true experience.
No, I've never worked in a store, but I have worked in a fast food place, and these two women kept complaining that their chicken was raw when it was not raw, from the story.
So, in October of 2001, Catherine Knight's trial was almost ready to go. She had entered a plea of not guilty, and her legal team had a solid defense ready. They were prepared to support her with expert witnesses, and so far it looked like the jury pool would swing in her favor. Who wouldn't? After all, she was sweet, matron-looking, very nice, older woman. Like, how could she be, like, responsible for this heinous crime? Then, the day that the trial commenced, the judge adjourned the case without testimony. It seemed at some point during the night, Catherine Knight had changed her plea to guilty.
Oh. May I ask why?
Well, she was escorted to prison that day, and the judge ordered that her papers be marked never to be released. For the first time in history, a woman in Australia was given a life sentence without parole.
She's from the land down under.
That was so bad.
I just lost any Australian listeners in that, which I don't
think. Hopefully there aren't, so they don't have to hear that. I'm sorry. So, this is a pretty fitting sentence, given that Knight stabbed her boyfriend 37 times.
37?
Oh, no, I'm not done yet. 37 times, skinned his body, and cooked parts of him into a stew that she intended to serve to his children.
Did she eat him?
Would you like to find out? Alrighty. To this day, Catherine Knight still maintains her innocence,
but she uses...
to accept responsibility for her actions. She appealed her sentence before, though the appeal was denied almost immediately.
Good.
Though Knight claims that she has no memory of what she did, and that she couldn't have been capable of such a thing, her past with men tells a rather different and extremely chilling story.
You a big bitch.
So her violent history begins in 1973. While working as a...
Are you okay? What is it?
While working as a boner. I'm sorry, we're five.
And we almost did the story of Evelyn Dick. If this is how we react to her being a boner...
She was a boner in a butcher shop.
Less anything.
Yeah, and Knight met David Collette. Yeah, I think Collette is how you pronounce his last name.
Callet?
Callet?
I don't know, I'm reading it like Callet or Pellet.
Colette was raging, was a raging alcoholic and was prone to fistfights whenever the opportunity presented itself. Surprisingly, Colette found that Knight could hold her own and never hesitated to join him in a scuffle.
That's kind of cute.
Yeah, until you consider the fact that she murdered her husband and tried to feed him to her children.
Yeah.
Anyway, he soon realized, however, that Knight was capable of doing more than a little damage with her fist, and before long was finding himself dominated by her. Which, I mean, consent. Consent first. Consent is queen. Someone wants to be dominated. They consent to that.
I was going to say something, but then I realized that my mother listens to this podcast.
Please do not say whatever you were going to say.
It's not about me.
I still don't want to know. So, in 1974, she even convinced him to marry her, but he was heavily intoxicated the entire time.
Like, throughout the entire wedding?
When he agreed.
Oh.
Yeah, his intoxication that day was almost his downfall.
That's not a... Can't ask people important questions when they're not in their right state of mind.
Consent is queen. Okay, on their wedding night, after consummating their marriage three times, Colette fell asleep. Captain Knight, apparently instable, took issue with her new husband's premature exhaustion.
Insatiable.
Insatiable, thank you. And took issue with her new husband's premature exhaustion and strangled him.
Three times, lady. Three times. Is that not enough?
Yeah, she strangled him. He woke up, thankfully, and managed to fight Knight off, despite the fact that she attempted to kill him one day into their marriage. The union lasted for 10 more years.
10 years of this
fucker? During which they had two daughters and one period of separation after Colette left Knight in the middle of the night.
Oh, her poor children.
Yeah? Oh, but that's not all of her children. She has more.
Aww.
Knight went through a period of deep distress after he left her. Left her. At one point, she spent a few months in a psychiatric hospital, threatening the life of the mechanic. The mechanic who had serviced his car because it had allowed him to leave her. So she was like, I'm going to kill the dude who helped my husband fix his car.
That's on a whole nother level.
Yep. He even took her back when she was released from the hospital, even though the reunion didn't last long.
Well, no. I'm surprised he hasn't got a restraining order against her at this point.
Yep. 6 years after her stint in the psych, her stunt, it's a stint, her stunt in the psych ward, after Knight met David's son. A few months after their meeting, he moved in with her and her two daughters, so he kept his own apartment. Something that would cause tension throughout their relationship.
Anything causes tension with a relationship with her.
Yep.
You can sneeze wrong and she'd be like,
Johnny, you're dead. The fact that Sanders had a life separate from hers caused Knight extreme emotional distress. And at one point, she slit the throat of his 2-month-old puppy in front of him to show
what
she was capable of.
Nothing wrong.
It really didn't.
It's
just a baby.
You're
gonna cry.
No, I'm fine. I'm a man. I'm fine.
I'm gonna cry.
I'm sensitive.
Me too.
Gentle.
I'm gonna cry. Okay. Despite that particular mishap, the two had a...
Mishap is an understatement.
The two had a daughter a year later. The Saunders left her shortly after their daughter's birth, as Knight had attempted to kill him by stabbing him with a pair of scissors.
Effective way to kill someone, first of all. Second of all, the puppy wasn't enough of a red flag.
I'm sorry, are you judging her based on her murder methods?
Yeah.
Okay. After Saunders had left, she met another man named John Chillingworth.
I really do appreciate the guy's names that she's hooking up with. They're, like, on a whole nother level.
Yep. Who she maintained a relationship with for 3 years. Together, the pair had a child, Knight's first son, For the most part, the relationship was without issue, though this may have been due to the fact that Knight was carrying on an affair with a man named John Price.
So she gets pissed at guys for, like, cheating and living a separate life, but then she lives a separate life.
Yep.
John is going to learn that he has a price to learn.
Oh my gosh. Her relationship with John Price would be one that finally pushed Catherine Knight over the edge, landing her in hot water and earning her...
I take back the joke now if he's the one that she murdered.
I take back the joke.
Okay.
The beginning of their relationship was without complications and seemed to be smooth sailing. Price had two older children who lived with him and liked Knight well enough. He worked as a miner and made good money, which kept Knight comfortably seated. However, when she suggested they marry, he declined. She turned violent. Because he said,
but not everyone wants to get married. I mean, it's just the way of the world.
Yeah.
You can't always get what you want, Catherine.
She ended up getting Price fired from his job, which resulted in him kicking her out. I don't know how he manages to do all these things. A few months later, she moved back in, though, and he still refused to marry her. According to their friends and neighbors, this was around the time she began to escalate. In February of 2000, an argument between Price and Knight culminated, with Price receiving a superficial chest wound after she attempted to stab him. He took out a restraining order against her.
Finally, someone gets a restraining order.
In an attempt to keep his children safe.
Finally, someone cares about their children.
Yep.
Like, if I was a father and my kids were around this crazy woman, like, as soon as she even threatens to hurt me, I'm gonna leave.
Yeah, he literally, towards the end of the month, he told his coworkers that if he was ever to go missing, it might be because my kids are.
Jesus.
And she did.
Oh.
Yeah. When Price came home from work, he followed his usual routine, checking in with the neighbors before he went to bed at 11. Knight came home shortly after, made herself dinner, watched TV, showered, and then went upstairs. She woke up Price, the two had some fun, and Price went back to bed.
But he has a restraining order against her.
Tried to get even.
Oh. But he's still willing to sleep with her?
Yeah. Then Catherine Knight took...
Straight men don't have brains.
They don't. Catherine Knight then took a butcher's knife from next to her bed, where she had taken it, keeping it in case she needed it.
Who's gonna fucking hurt her?
And stabbed the sleeping Price 37 times, according to the blood evidence. When he woke up while she was stabbing, according to blood evidence, he woke up while she was stabbing him.
That has to be awful.
Eventually, after he succumbed to his wounds, Knight dragged his body downstairs. Skinned him and hung his body from a meat hook hanging in the living room.
This is why you don't date a crazy bitch who was a butcher.
Yep. Then she decapitated him and cut up a few pieces of his body, cooking it in a dish with potato, pumpkin, beef, zucchini, cabbage, squash, and green beans. And then made a dish for herself, though from the half-discarded content, it appeared she couldn't finish it.
So she did eat him.
Yep. She then lay down next to the headless, mutilated corpse of Price, took a large number of pills, and passed out. Yep.
That's so close. I don't understand how people...
Price's coworkers heeded his warning the next morning and called the police after fearing the worst when he didn't show up.
Oh, bless them.
Yeah, the police arrived to find a gruesome scene and immediately detained the comatose Catherine Knight, who, once she woke up, claimed to have no memory of the night before.
Fake bed.
The police found Price's head in a boiling pot of vegetables on the stove. On the table, they found two full plates, each labeled with a name. In horror, the police realized what had happened. Catherine Knight had been planning on serving John Price's body parts to his children. Which, in more gruesome detail, this is actually very similar to a fairy tale that used to exist, where a mother ended up, fearing that her husband would favor her son over her daughter, because her son was a boy. And so she wanted her daughter to have a better life than her son. So she purposefully killed the son by slamming his head in a chest of apples, and then literally set him back up to make it look like he was alive, and said to the daughter, like, oh, hey, your brother has a really good apple. If he doesn't share it to you, with you, like, slap him. And so the daughter went out. Of course he didn't share it, because he's dead. She slapped him, and his decapitated head fell off of his body. And she was like, oh my god, I killed my brother. I went to the mom and was like, mom, I killed my brother. And the mom was like, oh my god, it's okay, honey. So, like, she literally made her daughter think that she killed her brother.
It's kind of like in 1922 with Stephen King's novel, where the father lets the son to help him kill the mother.
Yeah.
And the mother haunts him.
And then what ended up happening after the son was found dead, they said that he had run away to the father, and then they had put him into a pot pie. And then served it to the father, who ate his son. So that's Catherine Knight. She's terrifying, I hate her, and she's still alive. But she's in Australia.
And she'll never get out. I don't think she ever will get out. I don't think anyone will ever lay a single ounce of sympathy for her. Because, like, was there any known, like, even if there was abuse in her life, it doesn't exist. The fact that she literally chopped off a man and tried to feed his children.
Yeah, there must have been something going on with her. Where she, like, felt, I don't know.
Some type of way.
Anyway, you can go ahead and tell your story. Is it worse than mine?
There's a lot less cannibalism.
Oh, thank God.
But there's a lot more murder.
Of course.
It's not just one person.
Was how many?
They think, like, 40 people.
Alrighty, I'm gonna.
And that's including
that.
Children.
Thanks. I will.
Alrighty. Are you hungry after Catherine Knight's story?
Not really.
You won't be after this either. So I'm gonna talk about Belle Gunness. So Belle Gunness wanted the American dream. She grew up dirt poor in a small Norwegian village of Selbu. The small Norwegian village of Selbu. And like many, she immigrated to the United States and tried to find the American dream. She found it in Chicago when she discovered a, like, the best way to make money back then.
When was this?
The early 1900s.
Okay.
Late 1800s, I think. Not completely sure. But she discovered the best way to make money back then. Insurance fraud! So, to the outside world, disaster and tragedy struck Guinness at, like, so many times. And property she owned burned down, and those who were close to her died. Then there was always a silver lining in that, the fact that she was always getting money from this, like, any sort of tragedy that happened to her.
I already don't like that. Oh, wait, here, one second. I'm gonna go get collared.
Are you okay?
I hit my knee.
Nice.
Nice.
Okay. Go away, Vicky. So, so she always got paid no matter what happened to the people around her. And she was one of the first Black widows that became so widely known. And she credited with around 40 victims. She's also known as Hal's Belle or Lady Bluebeard. And she tended to kill her husbands and her own children.
Of course she did.
So, she eventually, of course, would run out of husbands, and then she would attract suitors to go to her farm where she would kill them.
That's about to make me feel better.
That's what I normally feel. So, Belle was a really big lady. She was 6 feet tall and weighed 200 pounds. And she was able to, of course, like, basically overpower any man who tried to escape her. So she first started murder and insurance fraud.
Why does that sound like, oh, you know, she first started, like, ballet or fashion designing when she was young?
It's just a hobby all girls get into. So, first started in 1893 when she married her first husband, Mads Sorensen, and together they opened up a confectionery store and had four children, Caroline, Axel, Myrtle, and Lucy. They also had a foster child named Jenny Olsen. With a husband, children, and a business, there were plenty of opportunities for Guinness to claim insurance. The business burned down first, then her two kids, Caroline and Axel, died from acute colitis. But acute colitis and strychnine poisoning share like common symptoms, like abdominal pain and things like that.
Oh, so people think she killed them?
No, but she did kill them, but the coroner just thought that they died of sickness. So she got her money.
Oh.
So she wanted more money, of course, and so she grew bolder. In 1900, her first husband, Mads, died on the day when his two life insurance policies conveniently overlapped. So she had not taken one, but she had taken two. Guinness received both of the life insurance payouts just for killing him. And the first doctor that examined his body realized that Mads had died of strychnine poisoning, but Guinness was overruled by the doctors because the doctors found out that he had died of heart failure, or like, they didn't find it out, but they determined that he died of heart failure.
No one's like, oh, wow, isn't this really convenient for her? Maybe we should look more into it and listen to the doctor. No, 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 no. No, he died of heart failure. What?
Here's a picture of her with Lucy, Myrtle, and Philip.
Lucy looks like Sunny from a series of unfortunate events.
I'm pretty sure Philip's.
Just kidding. Philip looks like Sunny.
So,
I don't know which one's which. I'm sorry.
With plenty of life insurance, like, in her pocket now, she took her three remaining children to LaPorte, Indiana, and in 1901, she bought a 42-acre farm at the end of the McClung Road. Though a woman of means, she still wanted more. Soon after, a part of the farm burned down and she collected more insurance money. On April 1st, 1902, she married Peter Gunness, a local butcher and widower.
Of course.
Her new husband brought with him two daughters who Belle saw as dollar signs. So not long after the wedding, one child died under mysterious circumstances. And Peter knew that something wasn't right and sent his eldest daughter, Swanhild, to stay with relatives. She was the only child to ever survive Gunness.
Wow, Peter's actually intelligent.
Well,
in a way.
Not really, because he didn't leave. So,
but at least he sent his daughter away.
Yeah, he saved his daughter, but he didn't save himself. In December 1902, he died when a meat grinder fell off a kitchen shelf and onto his head.
Oh, how convenient are the circumstances that a meat grinder will fall off a shelf and hit your head.
How convenient. So Belle's daughter, Jenny, told schoolmates, "My mama killed my papa. She hit him with a meat cleaver and he died. Don't tell a soul."
Meat cleaver?
Cleaver.
Cleaver.
Out of the mouth of babes is the truth. And the truth is cleaver. This time, the coroner noticed the symptoms of strychnine poisoning and ordered an inquest. But no hard evidence was found, and Belle confusedly cried crocodile tears over her husband's death. However, they soon dried up when she cashed in Peter's life insurance policy. 6 months after Peter's death, Belle gave birth to his son, Philip. So, with her second husband gone, she found a more efficient way to get money. She placed ads in newspapers for well-off suitors to come to her farm.
Hi, any rich husbands that have, like, really a lot of money that I could get when you die, like, meet me at this address.
Yeah, actually. So a lot of them traveled to LaPorte, and they were never seen again.
Of course they weren't.
in her letter, she had no problem convincing them to bring their money and to not tell anyone that they were coming. So they bought shares in her farm and deposited their money into Belle's bank. And when the transactions were done, she would poison their food or hit them over the head with a meat cleaver. Then, according to Jack Rosewood, author of Belle Gunness, The True Story of the Slaying Mother, Historical Serial Killers and Murderers, a long title that should have been reworked, in my opinion, she would either dismember the bodies and feed them to her pigs or bury them in the hog pen. So, on the morning of April 28th, 1908, her farmhouse burned to the ground where the town authorities found the bodies of Belle's three children, Lucy, Myrtle, and Philip. They also found the corpse of a headless woman thought to be Belle Gunness.
But sight is not.
It's not. So authorities thought that she was murdered, but several days after the fire, Asa Helglin turned up looking for his missing brother, Andrew. He was adamant that Gunness had killed his brother and pressed the LaPorte County Sheriff to search the farm for him. After his urging, investigators found another 11 bodies in the hog pen. And one was Belle's foster daughter, Jenny Olson, who had been missing since 1906. And I believe that Belle said that she had sent Jenny off to a boarding school and that she wouldn't be coming back.
When are we going to find Belle's body in the ashes?
You're not going to. So, after combing through the ashes, the investigators found dental bridge work belonging to Gunness. The coroner deemed this sufficient evidence to confirm that the headless corpse belonged to her. With Belle ruled out, attention turned to a farmhand, Ray Lampier. For a while, he was the prime suspect, but in the end, he only was charged with arson and not for the murders. Years later, Lampier admitted to on his deathbed that Belle was the killer and had faked her death. Days before the fire, they had traveled to Chicago to find and bring back a housekeeper. Unknown to this woman, she was to become Belle's headless body double in the fire. Doubts remain about whether the headless woman is Belle Gunness or a body double, and results from 2008 were inconclusive. And there is someone who people thought was Belle Gunness. 1931, a woman named Esther Carlson died in Los Angeles while awaiting trial for poisoning a man. She bore a striking resemblance to Gunness and was of similar age. But the idea was that, like, the clincher of this theory was that Carson had photographs of three children that resembled Belle, like Belle's kids, in her possession.
I don't like this.
Yeah. So, Belle Gunness was insane.
So,
and she killed a lot of people and she was never caught because she managed to hide well enough, even though, well, she might have been caught if you really believe the idea that she was Esther, but no one really knows. And the victims, like some of her suitors, were John Moo, Henry Gerholt, Olaus Severhard, Olvi Budsberg,
don't hurt yourself,
Olav Lindblom, and Andrew Helligan, whose brother was the one that went to search for him.
So, pretty much, if it weren't for that one, well, no, because that one thing in 2008 came back inconclusive, right?
Yeah.
So how did they figure out eventually that it was her?
That she was the killer?
Yeah. Or do we still not know 100% that it was her?
Oh, no, they know 100% that it was her. And I'm assuming they know it was her just from the, like, they lined everything up and then they looked back on former reports of, like, deaths that, like, of her first husband and, like, her second husband and the fact that they found so many dead bodies, and then there's the fact that her farmhand admitted that she was the killer of all of these people.
But there's no, like,
DNA evidence or like.
No, but I don't think forensic. I don't think forensic evidence was a thing at the time.
True. So now it's just kind of common sense.
Yeah. Together. And it's funny because the thing about LaPorte, Indiana, is that it's a very small town. It's very small, but
as small as Liechtenstein.
Let's look up how big is LaPorte. It only has like 21,732 people as of 2016. And there's actually been quite a few murders in LaPorte, Indiana.
I don't like that fact.
Yeah. It's just a lot to process because there's a lot.
Wait, how many people did you say lived in that?
21,732.
Oh, so Liechtenstein is a little bigger.
How big is?
It's 36,000 as of 2010.
Liechtenstein is very small.
It is, but it's adorable.
How would you know? You've never been.
It's like a baby Switzerland.
It is a baby Switzerland, you're right.
It's a baby Switzerland. No, but like it has so many cute little castles. Join Liechtenstein's royal family for a free party. What? Does that stuff just happen in Liechtenstein? Liechtenstein's royal family is having a party at their place with free beer, and you're all invited. Gee, Liechtenstein, aren't you swell?
So
they just had a beer party in the castle. That's so cute. Sorry, I was trying to make myself happy.
End of every really depressing episode, we just look at Liechtenstein and marvel at how cute the castles are.
That's so cute.
It is cute. I think your story kind of grossed me out a bit more than my story.
I agree.
Because
your story just made me mad at people who did not have common sense.
Well, back then, no one really cared to investigate. Like,
murder was easy to get away with.
Murder was so easy back then. It was too easy.
It was just like the police were almost like, oh, I don't really.
Okay. So, that was like unique as a female serial killer because for the most part, female serial killers tend to not go, I wouldn't say brutish, but they tend to not go the more physical way. And she was just straight up knocking people over the head with a meat cleaver, which I just think. Oh, that's so weird. All right.
Anyway, I feel like we should end this episode because I'm kind of just I'm spooked.
Yeah, I mean, oh, do you want to know where the nickname? Do you want to know where the nickname Lady Bluebeard came from before we sign off?
Sure.
So, I also like how I'm just not interesting enough for you and you're scrolling on your phone.
I'm sorry, I was trying to make myself happier after that gruesome tale. Excuse me.
I'm more important. So, they compared her to the famous Bluebeard, who would marry a succession of wives and murder them and chop them up, leaving their bodies in Forbidden Room. The connection to Bluebeard wasn't only because
Forbidden
she was...
Forbidden Room?
Yeah, like...
Is it like Beauty and the Beast? How the like Beast has his castle and there's that one room where it's like, Belle, you must never go.
Yeah, basically. Have you been on the Haunted Mansion ride in Disney? So they originally had a plot with Bluebeard where the dead bride in the attic room was one of his wives that discovered the dead, like, the pictures of his past wives and he pushed her out the window.
Then that didn't fit into a Disney movie. About the ride.
I mean, I think they changed the story regardless. But essentially, what Bluebeard would do was that he would, like, he was a pirate and he would marry, like, wives.
Oh, I knew he was a pirate. I figured with the name blue beard. That you're not an accountant.
You're so mean today.
So he would essentially marry a wife, then he would kill her, then he would marry a wife, and then he would kill her again. And this is just a very quick summary of Bluebeard, because I don't know it off the top of my head.
I would be... Well, it wouldn't be weird if you knew it off the top of your head. No. I was going to say I'd be kind of weirded out, but then I realized it's us we're talking about, so I don't think it would be that weird.
Yeah. So, he was a, like... He wasn't a pirate. He was, like, a powerful lord, owner of estates. And he often went away to war. And he would lie about the fact that he was murdering his wives. He would say that they would be sick and they would die, similar to how she would lie about, like, her children dying of colitis and things like that, when, in fact, he was poisoning them.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. So he had a forbidden room where there were just, inside of the room were hanging on the walls the bodies of Bluebeard's mm-hmm. wives, and he had strangled them all with his own hand, and I think he killed her too, if I remember correctly, like mm-hmm. the last wife, but anyway, Bluebeard was really fucked up.
Do you think, like, all killers have to have some sort of, like, psychopathy or...
I think most do.
So, like, do you think someone could kill someone with that?
But after her farm was discovered of all these dead bodies, 2,000 people showed up at her farm, and it was like a carnival, to the point where people were selling ice cream, popcorn, piling postcards at the farm, the victims and the remains that had been dug up.
So kind of like the Lowry House in New Orleans. That's, like, super popular.
Yeah, and, like, how when Bonnie and Clyde
were died.
When they died, a lot of people tried to take body parts off of them while they were still in the car.
Oh, I hate that. There was a game I was playing recently, too, where they had that sort of plot line where, like, someone really important died and, like, everyone wanted a piece of their body. So, like, they would cut off their own limbs and sew them on. It was like, it's so gross. It's so gross.
Yeah, it's really gross. And her story has been twisted a lot in media because there was yellow journalism back then. So journalists weren't really tight-knit.
Kathy Knights hasn't been changed.
No, it hasn't. Unfortunately, I wish someone made it smaller. So,
it's just, I wish it wasn't true.
I wish it was all fake. And that's Belle Gunness and her carnival of dead people.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, I hope you had... I don't want to say I hope you had fun listening.
Hope you had a spooky time. Be careful who you marry.
And as always, folks, stay spoopy.
And safe.
And safe.
Be careful who you marry.
Don't marry crazies.
Don't.
Just don't.
Hey, Alex here. Thank you for listening to As Haunts and Spooky with Ari and myself. We are under Instagram as ALAIS.podcast, and we are also on Twitter as ALAIS.podcast. If you or anyone else you know has had a spooky experience, email us the story at ashauntsandspooky@gmail.com. And if you're able to, please rate, subscribe, leave a review. Any traction that we can get is good enough for us. Thanks.